Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Well, our guys did a good job this weekend being able to get two out of three. We just really, again, have to solve that last one. We've got to get some people to step up out of the bullpen and help us.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is on the ones and twos as always, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium 24-Hour Sports Network. Give us a call today if you'd like on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, that's 337-706-0111. We got a lot to get to on today's show. Coming up in the second hour, we have an interview with longtime head coach of the LSU Eunice baseball team, six-time national champion. They are the defending national champions for their level. They're about to start region play next week. Coach Jeff Willis makes some time for us here on RP3 and Company in the second hour. In the third hour, we'll have our good friend Andrew Juge join us from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's going to help us give a preview of rookie minicamp is this week, wraps up over the weekend. So he'll give us a preview on that as well, as the Hoodats get ready for some rookie mini camp, who he's looking forward to seeing, so forth and so forth. And we're also going to be joined in the third hour by Brock McKee. He is the assistant athletic director at Louisiana Tech. He's going to help us give us a preview of tonight's LSU La Tech baseball game, but also give us an update on how the university and the athletic department and the sports teams, and particularly the baseball and softball team, are dealing in the aftermath of the tornado that touched down there in the Ruston area only a few weeks ago. Plus, we'll talk more LSU baseball, of course, NBA playoffs, and much, much more. But I want to start things off with UL baseball, the Raging Cajuns. You heard Tony Robichaud there, longtime head coach, talk about that they were able to kind of get things done there. They took two of three on the road at Coastal Carolina. It's the second straight year they've beat Coastal Carolina in a series. But this team needed this desperately, because as it stands right now, despite winning two of three, UL is still number 11 overall in the Sun Belt Conference standings. They take the top 10 for the conference tournament held in Conway, Arkansas this year. So UL still has work to do when it comes to getting a chance to play in the postseason. They're 22-28 overall now. They're 10-14 in conference play. They face the worst team in the Sun Belt Conference this coming weekend as they host Georgia State for the final home series there at Russo Park. Then they go on the road to face ULM to wrap up the year with a three-game set up there along I-20. So they have everything in front of them. Right now they're currently 11 of 12. Georgia State's below them. ULM is right above them. And there's only a few games difference between, like, the 10-11 spot and the 6 spot. Okay? Everyone is kind of, let's be honest, everyone's kind of mediocre this year in the Sun Belt Conference. There's a lot of teams. There's a big logjam there. So with two series left on the schedule, the Raging Cajuns still have an opportunity to extend their season and get themselves into postseason. Now, remind you, UL and Coastal Carolina were the two teams that people thought were going to win their divisions in the Sun Belt this year. That's not going to happen. So definitely a season where expectations were not met. But Tony Robichaux says he and his team, they're not worried about what the standings are looking like in the Sun Belt Conference. They're just going to go out there and play their games.
Right now, we're not looking at any standings. We're trying not to look back. What we're trying to do is just try to beat people pitch by pitch, inning by inning, and game by game. And that's what we think we have to do and not get caught in to looking elsewhere or who we play in or what their record is. I'm sure Coastal looked at our record. You have to be careful with records. You know, like I said, the Red Sox started off really slow. But if you went back and looked at real numbers, their starters' ERAs was high fours. Their bullpen was high fours. Now they've turned it completely around. But if you go back and look at their ERAs now, the starters' ERAs are 2.4-something, and the bullpen's 2.3-something.
Tony Robichaux also said that, you know, kind of elaborated even further, that they really can't be worried about the standings and what their record is or where they're at, because they have to be laser-focused this week in particular.
Got a lot of stuff this week to deal with, finals. Friday we'll get the guys graduated that are graduating. Saturday we'll do the senior walk, and then Sunday all the mothers will throw out the first pitch on Mother's Day, and potentially we have some bad weather coming in too. So we got a lot of stuff working this weekend.
They have a lot going on this weekend. They also have Military Appreciation Day, which I do believe is Friday. So there's a lot going on with the UL baseball team. They're trending in the right direction. That's good. Taking 2 of 3 from Coastal Carolina is a good thing. Tony did talk about that he would really have liked to have gotten a sweep and that they let the third game get away from them, that Sunday game. And he talked about how they're kind of vulnerable with the rotation, and a part of that is because of Gunnar Leje, the former lights-out number one starter for this team that has had to battle back from missing all of last year due to not one but two different surgeries. He's tried to be the number one ace. He's tried to be a starter. They put him in the bullpen. Now he's been shut down a little bit more. So he has not been able to go out there and eat up those innings and take the command of the rotation that probably Tony and the rest of the staff was hoping Gunnar would, and to be perfectly honest, Gunnar was probably hoping he would be able to do. And Tony talked about how kind of vulnerable that makes their team, and in particular their rotation.
That's the lack of depth issue, and that's why we were hoping that, you know, eventually along the way Gunnar would make it back, because he could solve that issue for us maybe. But because it's weekend to weekend and the innings and the time back for him has not allowed him to come back out and be a starter. So you are right, there is risk-reward there. But I feel we have to go after game one and win it. From there, I like the way we're set up for game one and two. Brandon's got to give us a little bit more, but which I think he can. But it just puts us vulnerable on Sunday.
Vulnerable on Sunday. So he's got two pitchers that he believes can kind of work some magic for him. Tony was asked, with this being such a big series coming up and needing to build the momentum, who possibly could take the bump for the Raging Cajuns this Sunday in the final home game at Russo Park this season?
You know, Gunnar would be a good choice if that would work out. On the other hand, just a matter of seeing what you have left from Friday and Saturday. It might be a mixture of taking 2 to 3 arms and, you know, trying to give a guy 2 innings and another guy 2 innings and another guy maybe an inning or two. We have a tendency sometimes, with lack of experience, of getting out of an inning. So sometimes you got to let some guys have a clean inning. They pitch a little better in clean innings. So we might have to adjust out. You can bring Armstrong in and bad stuff. You can bring a couple guys in and bad stuff, Grant Cox. But then some of them, you know, it's tough. They can't get out. They can't stop the spinning. But they can go back out the next inning and throw you a good inning. And that's the Jekyll and the Hyde in experience, right? We might have to take a look at that and then try to sense that and then try to pitch that away.
Tony also talked about Austin Perrin, whose ERA is not great, 4.47, but there's not many guys on the team that have a great ERA this season for the rotation. But he's had moments where he's pitched very well. He's 3-4 overall, and he's appeared in 12 games this season for the Raging Cajuns, 9 starts, 3-4. He's hovering around .500 as a pitcher. He's also picked up a save. They really don't have a closer. I mean, right now they have 9 different guys that have saves. 9. Okay, so it's kind of spread all over. But Austin has been a big innings eater for them. He's pitched the second most innings on the team with over 56 innings pitched, only behind Jacob Schultz. And Austin has showed some flashes this year. He really has. And 46 strikeouts. He doesn't have the most overpowering stuff, but Tony likes what he's seen from Austin of late, and it actually, the way Austin's performed out there on the bump for the Cajuns reminds him of someone else.
We finally got some guys lined up that I just think if we had enough depth in this bullpen, they're lined up in their best roles. I like AP where he's at. I think he's really good in that role. When people have to swing to get back into a game, he reminds me a lot of Andy Groh when Andy Groh pitched. When people had to swing their way back into the game, they had to swing at a changeup, and that's hard to do. I hate when we face a guy with a real good changeup and we have to swing our way back into the game.
You know, Austin started off the year as primarily a starter, and now they've moved him to middle relief, okay? And what he's talking about is that Austin's been able to come in there and be extremely effective. Think of it comparable, maybe not as intimidating stuff of what's happening with LSU and moving Zach Hess back to the bullpen, teed up a bunch of innings, because this is what Austin's done in his last 3 outings. UT Arlington, 2 2/3. Texas State, 3 innings. Coastal Carolina, 3 innings. The last 2 outings, he's only given up a total of 2 hits, 1 hit in each game. Coastal, he struck out 6. In the 3 innings of work. So maybe they found where Austin needs to be for this team. But once again, it's depth, not having Gunner being able to be there to take up a lot of the, I guess a lot of the slack, has really kind of hurt them in a lot of ways. Tony was also asked about, you know, hitting, you know, Todd Lott. Cody mentioned it in the 2-minute drill. Todd Lott's been named the LSWA Hitter of the Week. He had a monstrous series at Coastal Carolina, and he's had a very good season in general. But he's not the only one that's had a good year at the plate. We've talked a lot about Hayden Cantrell on this program, the former Turlings Catholic star. But, you know, you look at Todd Lott, .344 on the year. OPS is .921. Okay, he scored 27 runs. He's got 6 home runs, 37 ribbies, slugging percentage over .500. He's had himself a good year. Hayden Cantrell's batting over .300. Brennan Bro, the former STM star, is a little under .300, batting about .272. But another guy that has come on and has dealt with a little injuries is Daniel LaHare. Now, he's only appeared in 36 games. He's been banged up a little bit. Started 31 of them. He's only batting .258, but when he hits well, this team seems to do a lot better. Tony talked about the importance of having Daniel in the lineup.
Well, it helps us enormously because, you know, he can do more than just play first base. He can head out to the outfield for us if we need to. And one good thing, he's been able to handle first base because of that labrum. They've strengthened everything else around the labrum. He's never going to throw like he once did, but he can throw. And so by being able to play first base has even been a bigger weapon for us because that's where the need was. That's where the opening was. And then having Brennan Breaux and Vaillant, guys that can really roam in the outfield, that's helped us too. Because when you take that kind of center fielder off your field, a lot of people can't recover, you know, and put another guy back in there. But being able to put Breaux right back in after pulling the guy out like LaHare has helped us too. So Danny's an energy guy. He plays hard. He's a guy that would have made a difference if he was in the lineup every day, but at least he's back now, and he's healthy as he's ever been. That high ankle sprain is fully gone. That hand is healed up, and that labrum's going to always be there because it's torn, but we've strengthened or tried to strengthen everything else around that tear to help him. So it's been a big, big, big weapon for us. And now, you know, he's also hitting left-handed pitching and right-handed pitching. That's been big, too.
That's Tony Robichaud and Daniel LaHare, who apparently has been a walking MASH unit all season. But the Cajuns are trending in the right direction. You have to like what you've seen, if you're a Raging Cajun fan, from Tony Robichaud's club at Coastal Carolina over the weekend. Taking 2 of 3 without even having Gunnar Leger really making an impact. Can they keep it going this weekend at Russo Park? You'd like a sweep against the worst team in the conference. Hopefully a sweep would get you above ULM in the standings. That would get you to 10. And then that last series at the Warhawks, Cajuns Warhawks, would likely decide who gets the final spot in the conference tournament back in Conway, South Carolina. Cajuns are trending in the right direction. Some positivity at this week's press conference with Tony Robichaud. We'll see if they can build off of that. When we come back, we'll stick with the Raging Cajun talk. Jerry Glasgow, his team had their weekend series reduced. But does that matter as they gear up for conference tournament play starting this week? We don't think so. We'll talk more about that when we come back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW, Channel 32.1 Stadium, 24-hour sports network. Raging Cajun baseball team's trending in the right direction? Possibly. The softball team, they're already there. They had their season ended prematurely, as the final two games of the regular season series at ULM were canceled due to weather. They only got one game in, so they end the regular season 47-4 overall, 25-0. That's right, 25-0 in conference play. They are your regular season Sun Belt Conference champions, and they are gearing up for the Sun Belt Conference tournament, which will be in a few days over in lovely San Marcos, Texas. Has anyone ever said lovely San Marcos, Texas? I just did. I'm starting to think. They don't know who they're going to play yet because obviously some other teams have to go through the bracket to get to UL because they are the top overall seed. They're the overwhelming favorite to win this tournament. They're ranked in the top 10 nationally, and they're looking to add a Sun Belt Conference tournament to their resume and then get ready for NCAA regional play. Maybe they'll host. Maybe they won't. But Jerry Glasgow asked about that on if the Cajuns could host a regional. This was what Coach Glasgow's thoughts were.
You know, I don't know that because That's the committee's going to decide. And whatever they say, whatever the committee says, we'll respect it, and we'll just go where they tell us to go, and we'll compete as hard as we can compete. And you know, you can make an argument it's better to be a 12 seed than it is to be a 16, a 2 seed at a 12 seed regional than it is to be the 16-1, and then face, you know, an Oklahoma or UCLA in round two. All that's just stuff that at this point, that's up to the committee to tell us where we need to go. And what we have to do is get out there and figure out how to win wherever they send us to. So that's what our mindset will be.
And that's the right mindset for Jerry Glasgow to have for his team. You know, you could make the argument that they should host based on their tradition, based on, you know, what kind of fandom you're going to get out to the park. And look, this is one of the best teams in the country. Absolutely. They're a top 10 team. But that said, you know, you almost feel like from another perspective, would it be more beneficial for them to be a 2 seed in a regional? That way they can avoid Oklahoma and UCLA in the super regional round. I think that would probably be better suited. Even though you would have to sacrifice playing there at Lampson Park, you'd have the opportunity to make it to a Supers and possibly make it to Oklahoma City for the College World Series. Jerry talked a little bit about was only playing one game up at ULM. Was that a good thing or was that a bad thing?
For RPI, I think it was a really good thing. You know, if you got, we're playing, I think it was number 232 last week in RPI, which is not at all what you would like to see for your last weekend of the regular season. So in that sense, it got us out of playing two more games against a 232 RPI team, and we have to pick up two more times with that 11-40 record on our RPI. So from that standpoint, it was a disaster series to be to be faced with that kind of competition the last weekend of the year. On the other hand, you know, I feel very strongly that anything I do, I want to do it well. Anything that we do as a team, we want to do it well. And as part of Sun Belt Conference, I think anything we do as a conference, we want to do it very well. And so we want our sport to grow. We want our fan base to grow. We want the fans of our sport to grow. And I'm very passionate that if people are driving 8-10 hours to watch a game and they rent a hotel, that, you know, I feel strong that they should be able to see a softball game. If the baseball team is 1,000 feet away, play two games that day on a much bigger area, bigger field. So, you know, I think we should always do the best we can do in everything we do in our lives, and I think our programs and our conference should expect the same.
Jerry Glasgow and his Raging Cajuns headed to San Marcos to take part in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. We'll see if they can come back a champion. NBA playoff talk next here on 103.7 The Game.
Ball, one-on-one with Curry. Drives the lane. Floater bouncing in. Hung on the front rim and it dropped. Big hoop for Chris Paul.
Houston Rockets tie up the series. It's all even, two games apiece in the Western Conference semifinals as the Houston Rockets take down the Golden State Warriors, the two-time champs, 112-108 to even that series. This has been a physical, entertaining series. I'm glad to see that the Houston Rockets put their crybabiness aside and actually started winning some games. That makes me happy because I want this to be an entertaining series. And it did look like that Golden State was very close to embarrassing the Houston Rockets and treating them dirty. This is RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium. Look, Golden State brought it last night. It was an entertaining game. Draymond Green had a double-double. Kevin Durant, who's been just nearly unstoppable, scored 34 points last night. Steph Curry had a bounce-back game. He's been a little off, right? Even a 75%, 80%, Steph Curry is still better than most. But he's been struggling a little bit. He didn't shoot great last night from the field. He was 12 of 25, but he still dropped in 30 points. But that wasn't enough. The Rockets were just better. Tucker came, had 17 points. Chris Paul, as you heard, had 13 points. Harden, of course, is going to pace the Rockets like always with 38. And Eric Gordon. How many former Hornets / Pelicans are on the damn Rockets roster? Let's start there. Eric Gordon had 20. Austin Rivers came up big off the bench. Drop it in 10 points for the Rockets. The Rockets bench was better than the Warriors bench. But this is going to be a physical series. Right? It's already been physical. Draymond Green accidentally poked James Harden in the eyes. There's going to be a lot of jawing. There's going to be a lot of talking. There's going to be a lot of back and forth in this series. Thankfully, the Rockets have kind of got their act together and starting playing well and have made this a series because the narrative has been ever since last year's Western Conference Finals where the Rockets let the Warriors off the hook that the only team built that could possibly slow down Golden State's dynasty, the unstoppable machine that has become, are the Rockets. I think they can slow them down. I'm still not confident that they can win a series just because defensively. Now, Houston's played better defense as the season has progressed, but they lost two of their best defenders in free agency. They tried the Carmelo Anthony thing. We know Carmelo's never played defense. They've gotten better as the season's progressed. So now James Harden and the Rockets have dug themselves out of an 0-2 hole to even their Western Conference semifinal series. They held off a late rally by Golden State. Harden had to say this afterwards. When you're dealing with these guys, if you let Klay Thompson and Steph Curry run around and shoot threes, you don't have no chance. The only chance we have is to be in their bodies and make every shot that they take contested. That lets you know what you need to do. If Houston's going to have a chance to win this series, they're going to have to be physical from start to finish. As soon as the ball tips to the horn ends, that's the only way they're going to win this series. They're going to have to be physical. They did a good job on Klay last night. Steph, even though he struggled from the field, he still got the 30. Klay, not so much. Klay only had 11 points. So if you can get physical with Golden State, maybe contain one of the Splash Brothers, you're not going to contain Kevin Durant. You just stop it right now. It's just like the Warriors are not going to contain James Harden. Those two guys are on a whole different level than everyone else. They're freaks of nature. They're scoring machines. You're not going to stop them. But those guys can't win a game by themselves. They need help. So if I'm the Rockets, I keep going with this formula. Yeah, okay, let KD get his. That's fine. We're going to shut down one of the guys. We're going to frustrate Curry, make him take bad shots, and we're going to frustrate Klay Thompson because if we do that, we have a chance. The Rockets were up by 9 before Golden State had their rally, scoring the next 7 points, capped by a 3-pointer by Curry to get the game within 110-108 with 19 seconds left. But then Harden made 1 of 2 free throws with 11.5 seconds left, and then Kevin Durant missed a 3 after that. But the Warriors still had a chance to win. They got the rebound, and Curry also missed a 3-point attempt before Golden State was forced to foul Chris Paul. Durant said this afterwards, "We got a couple wide-open looks. They just didn't fall for us." It's going to be a physical series, but the Rockets are also benefiting from Golden State not playing to their potential. Steph Curry having an okay series. Klay Thompson disappearing last night. Part of that's because of Houston's defense. But the Warriors still had a chance to win this game and game three. So it's great that it's even. But can Houston keep this up? Can the Rockets keep up this level of physicality and intensity to win this series? We'll find out. Interesting to see where this series goes now. What happens next? Because it has been an entertaining series between the Rockets and the Warriors, and that's what we expected. Another series that most of us that follow the NBA expected to be entertaining as well is the Eastern Conference semifinals between the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Greek freak, Giannis, said, no, no. No, no. The Bucks are absolutely slapping around the Boston Celtics. Mind you, the Bucks lost the opening game of this series. After last night, Milwaukee, 3 games to Boston's 1. The Celtics are on the brink of elimination after winning the first game in convincing fashion. Giannis has taken over this series. Boston has no answer for him. None. They can't. They figured out how to slow him down and frustrate him in game one, and Milwaukee made the adjustment, and Giannis made the adjustment, because what they did, they had the other guys on the Bucks run up the court and have the ball in their hands to feed Giannis instead of having Giannis make his own shot. And after game one, they made that adjustment, and Boston has no answer. Have you seen Al Horford try to play against Giannis? It's not fair. Al Horford's a good player. Giannis makes him look like a chump. Makes him look like a chump. Everyone forgets the team that had the best regular season record in the NBA was the Milwaukee Bucks. But they're not sexy, right? They got the guy who's more than likely going to be the MVP, but they don't have the juice of Golden State. They don't have the juice of Houston. Boston obviously has all the tradition, and they've been built together to be this super team. But it's not happening. And a guy that has just wilted in this Eastern Conference semifinals is Kyrie Irving. You can't say Kyrie's not clutch, because we remember what he did in the NBA Finals when he shot that game-winning three-pointer over a leaping Steph Curry, right? That helped Cleveland win that championship. Its only championship. But Kyrie has looked absolutely awful in this playoffs. And just a reminder, courtesy of Aaron Torres, Kyrie Irving's resume. Never made the playoffs before LeBron got to Cleveland. Celtics made the conference finals without him last year, because remember, he got hurt and missed the playoffs. Points, field goal percentage, three-point percentage down in these playoffs from the regular season. Kyrie is fun to watch, but you aren't winning anything if he is the best player on your team. There may be a little truth to that. Kyrie is a playmaker. Kyrie makes big shots. Kyrie is a world champion. Kyrie's not a number one. He's a great number two. And there's been a lot of reporting about this team's chemistry this year out of Boston. Hayward is still not the player that he was in Utah before they made the trade for him, Boston did, and he suffered that gruesome injury in the opening minutes of the first game of last season. And he had to miss all of last year. He's still not the same player that he once was. Now, it may take a little bit longer for Hayward, just like it did Paul George. Remember when Paul George suffered his gruesome injury the next year that he came back, he was kind of a shell of himself. He's really only now gotten back to the all-star caliber pre-injury Paul George, and that was this past season in Oklahoma City. So maybe Hayward will develop even further next year. But this team has struggled with chemistry. When Hayward was out all of last year, and then Kyrie got hurt at the beginning of the playoffs, and this team reached all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals with guys like Jason Tatum and Rozier and Marcus Smart and Al Horford. And Brad Stevens, as good of a coach as he is, he's not been able to figure out how to have all those pieces on the court with Kyrie and Hayward. And it can tell. They do not play a cohesive brand of basketball. They just don't. Last night, as the final seconds ticked off the clock there at TD Garden in Boston, Kyrie Irving marched off the court well ahead of his teammates. He got off the court and down the long hallway outside of locker room so fast that by the time he ducked into the door and disappeared from view, none of his teammates had even reached the door. It's understandable why Irving would want to leave the court so quickly. After his last dud on Monday night, when he went 7 of 22. You're supposed to be the best player on a team that's supposed to be competing for a NBA World Championship. And you're shooting 7 of 22 while scoring 23 points in the 113-10 Game 4 loss to the Bucks. The Celtics are now on the brink of elimination. Irving said this, "I missed shots. Shots just didn't go in. You go out and prepare. Like I said, sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't." They tend to not go in as much for Kyrie. He's a volume shooter. Always has been. He was that way his one season at Duke for Coach K. And he's been that way his entire NBA career. The guy's a volume shooter. He just is. This is what Kyrie's done over the past three games. I'm reminding you, Boston punched Milwaukee in the mouth, treated them like a redheaded stepchild in game one. And we were like, oh, Brad Stevens knows what he's doing. He's the veteran coach. He's savvy. Boston has all the experience. They're going to take down the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis and those guys are not ready. That was the narrative that was pumping out of the national media, and particularly the four-letter network, who just so happens to be near Boston and loves New England area teams. Not so much. Kyrie has gone 19 for 62 in the last three games. That's 31% from the field. Those 43 missed field goal attempts are the most Irving has ever missed over a three-game stretch in the playoffs. 19 of 62. So Golden State, Houston, they're going to be in a dogfight to the very end. That series is probably going six, at least going six now. Maybe probably has to go seven. Boston is going to have to pull something out of their hat to even not be eliminated in five games. And that's kind of stunning. But Greek Freak, ooh, that's a bad man. It's a bad man. Big and athletic. Bad, 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 bad. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the first hour with a bit of an honor for former Raging Cajun great right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, Stadium Network 24-Hour Sports. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111. Coming up in the second hour will be our interview with the longtime head baseball coach at LSU, Eunice. Jeff Willis will join us. They are the defending national champions. He's guided the Bengals to 6 national championships, looking to add a 7th this year. Region tournament play begins for the Bengals next week. So we called up with Jeff Willis. We'll have that for you here in the second hour. But before we close out things here in the first, one of our own, Acadiana legend, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, and a former New Orleans Saints backup, Jake DeLome, friend of the station.
Friend of the station as well.
Friend of the station. Jake is one of 4 Carolina Panthers legends that are joining that team's Hall of Honor. It was announced yesterday. It'll be wide receiver Steve Smith, obviously. Slam dunk choice. Jake DeLome.
Steve Smith Sr.
Steve Smith Sr., yes. Don't forget the senior. No. Was there ever a better little man trash talker than Steve Smith Sr.?
In football.
In football?
In football.
Like, and he was so tough.
Because Eddie Guerrero would rival, but he didn't play football.
Nah, that's true. That's true. So DeLome is, along with Steve Smith, tight end Wesley Walls, and offensive tackle Jordan Gross, have earned spots as team legends on Monday. Now, there's been some scuttlebutt about the 4. I don't care about that because, well, we're not Panther fans here. What we care about is DeLome.
I have a question. Jake DeLome, now a Carolina Panthers Hall of Famer. What took so long?
Well, that's the other thing, is that it's the Hall of Honor now more than doubles its membership.
That's what I'm about to say.
With its announcement.
Yeah, how many people are the Panthers? I mean, they're a young franchise.
Well, they're not that young anymore.
I guess. I mean, comparatively, though, right? I mean, the Saints were around in the 60s. Where the
first inductee since 1998.
Yikes.
They have not inducted anyone since 1998.
That is an era of mediocrity.
They've been to the Super Bowl since then.
Well, I mean, in the last 5 years. You're not going to put Cam Newton in now.
Since they put in the last first inductees, they've been to the Super Bowl twice.
Well, Jake DeLome, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. That's what took so long. That was my point.
No individual has been inducted into the Panthers Hall of Fame since 1998, an inexplicable 21-year absence.
It's like they lost the key. Or they forgot the password to log into the computer system that like actually put, oh, what's the password?
Carolina Rocks 1.
Right.
Carolina Rocks 1 exclamation point.
Sharp teeth and claws 1. My knee hurts 2.
The last one to be inducted, another former New Orleans Saint, Sam Mills.
Where?
Okay. Dome patroller that ended his career with the Carolina Panthers.
Does that even count?
So he's there, and now they add another. So this is what I would do if I was leading the Saints social media team. I'd be like, congratulations, Carolina Panthers. You keep adding guys to your Hall of Fame that started their career as New Orleans Saints. Bravo for taking our leftovers.
Keep up the good work.
But all seriousness, congratulations to Jake. Well-deserved honor. One of the best guys you'll ever deal with, and he got a great chance in Carolina. The Saints probably should have given him that chance, but that was another regime in charge. First hour in the books. Second hour coming up right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I hope the morning's treating you well, ladies and gentlemen. It's treating Cody Schutz and I well here inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Network. 24 hours of sports, news, coverage, games, and some wrestling. Can't wait for that. First hour, we talked Raging Cajuns baseball, how they turned, hopefully, are turning things around, trying to build some momentum to get to their conference tournament after taking 2-3 last weekend in Conway, South Carolina, against Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers. We also touched base on the Raging Cajun softball team gearing up. They're ready to start Sunbelt Conference tournament play this week over in San Marcos, Texas. We touched on the NBA playoffs. Great series developing between the Rockets and the Warriors. Bucks and Celtics, nah, not so much. And then Jake Delhomme being inducted into the Carolina Panthers Hall of Honor. But now it's time to talk a little LSU baseball. We talked about it yesterday's show, how Ole Miss won for the first time in Baton Rouge, took a series for the first time in Baton Rouge since 1982. That's when Ronald Reagan was president. The rotation is a mess. Eric Walker struggled mightily. Pitched actually pretty well. Only gave up three hits on Saturday. Two of them were home runs. That totaled four runs. Landon Marceau got roughed up. They've moved Zach Hess out of the Friday night role into the bullpen. He looked sensational coming out. Wild Thing persona and all on Friday to help him win that game. But Mikhail Hilliard did not pitch well. And now it comes out, the news, after dropping down in the rankings, dropping down in the SEC standings now. Now they're on the outside looking in the top four. Once again, top four in the regular season earn that first round bye at the SEC tournament in Hoover. They avoid the single elimination round on that Tuesday. And now they have to go on the road to play the second best team overall in the SEC and the team that's leading the SEC West in Arkansas with a three-game set at Fayetteville this weekend. You can listen to all three games live right here on 103.7 The Game, by the way. But then the news comes out that we're thinking that the team's best pitcher, or let's make the argument, most consistent pitcher this season has been Cole Henry. The freshman has stepped up. And Paul Maneri a few weeks ago was trying to make the move to put Cole Henry as the Friday night starter and move Zach Hess to the bullpen. That was for the Alabama series on the road. He makes the decision, then half an hour later, the trainer says there's something wrong with Cole, his elbow. So they had to shut him down. He missed the Alabama series, then he missed this last weekend series against Ole Miss. That's why Mikhail Hilliard had to go on Friday. And Paul Maneri lets us know yesterday that, guess what? Cole Henry, not pitching this weekend either. In a series that they need, Cole Henry's not going to be available.
Not even making the trip.
He's not even making the trip. They need to win the series. Now, LSU's 10 has tended to have Arkansas's number, right? Even when the Hogs are good, the Tigers, that's one of those teams that they always have their number. But
rebuttal
is the same scenario was just this past weekend, because they've always owned Ole Miss, because Ole Miss had not won a series in Baton Rouge since 1982.
There you go.
That ended this past weekend. LSU's rotation is not well. What are they saving Cole Henry for? Is it the arm soreness? Are they maybe saving him, getting him a rep against Auburn, who's fading a little bit? That's the last regular season series for LSU before the conference tournament. Are they saving him for the conference tournament? is LSU talented enough to be able to go into the SEC tournament in Hoover as a 6 seed or a 7 seed and go through the single elimination and win the whole damn thing? Absolutely. Have you seen this lineup hit? Have you seen Antoine Duplantis and Zach Watson and Daniel Cabrera and Josh Smith? These guys are lights out, man. They can hit the ball. They just don't have a rotation right now that can do their job enough to be able to allow them to win more games. Cody, you know how important this weekend series is at Arkansas. You know how much this team struggles on the road this season. They're well below 500. LSU is. And now Cole Henry's not pitching again. Third week in a row, he's been shelved. I guess they're going to go with Mikhail Hilliard on Friday with Walker and Landon Marceau. Your thoughts as of right now?
More of the same. I mean, I don't really know how much farther we can break this down. I mean, they're not saving Cole Henry for anything, I don't think. Cole Henry can't throw the ball right now. I think that's what it boils down to. I mean, if we think that LSU is, if Cole Henry could throw today, but maybe we, you know, if he throws today, it could get worse and then it's going to go. So you need to hold him out today so he can maybe throw later. That means he can't throw today. So at this point, LSU needs to rely on the bats, and that's going to make everything tough because, you know, you never know when you might have a guy come out there and give you 6 scoreless innings, but you can't count on that ever from this LSU pitching staff so far this season at least. So it's going to fall all on what LSU does at the plate. Long gone are my hopes of how games early in the season LSU would fall down. By the third inning, they'd be losing, you know, 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. And then you sit there and tell yourself, all right, you know, get the guy in there, shut him down, don't let him score, chip away at the lead there, and then maybe you have a chance at the end of the game. I don't know how much more they can count on that considering they have no one, it seems, left to start these games. So I don't know how deep you're going to get these guys to go.
And who's going to finish? That's the other thing. That's the other thing that compounds this is that if you thought, okay, our starting rotation is struggling, so we're going to depend on the bullpen to eat up innings, right? Do you have faith in your bullpen after what you saw from Devin Fontenot in recent weeks and how he imploded on Sunday? When the team rallies, as you say, they chipped away, they were down. They score all those runs back-to-back-to-back home runs, right, to tie up the game. And they do that with 2 outs, Cody. The lineup comes through and scores and forces extras. And then your closer comes in and gives up 4 runs. So are you even confident that even if you can't get 4 innings of good work or 5 innings out of this and you can only say, let's say your starting rotation is only going to get you 4 and 1/3 or 4 2/3 innings of work. And you can hand it over to Todd Peterson and Zach Hess and then have Fontenot close the door. Are you confident that the bullpen can bring you home? That's not a rhetorical, by the way. I'm asking you directly.
I mean, I guess. As a fan, I'm going to say yeah, but I feel like I might be lying a little bit to myself.
I mean, I think Zach can eat up innings for you, but you can't have him throw 4 like they did the other night, right? And that's the other thing.
That's the problem. Because, I mean, if he throws those, even if he throws 3, though, do you get him back for 1? That's the problem. Like, Do you do a thing where
you could probably have them throw 4, maybe 5 innings over a 3-game series total?
I mean, but can you do a thing where like a Clay Moffitt or someone comes and does like the start and goes 1, maybe 2 innings, and if you can get through the lineup 1 time with anyone, it doesn't matter. I just threw Clay Moffitt's name out there because with anyone, it doesn't matter, and then go to Zach Hess, you know, in the 4th and see if he can get you from the 4th to the 9th.
It's a difficult situation, right? They don't know who's going to start on Friday. We do know who's going to start tonight because this is the next to last midweek game for the Tigers at Alex Box Stadium tonight versus those Bulldogs from Louisiana Tech. Now, LSU's dominated this series. We know this. The pitching matchup, Tech's going to throw the senior lefty, Logan Robbins, 3-3 with an ERA of 5.30. He's pitched a lot of innings, 54 innings, 45 strikeouts. Pretty decent pitcher. LSU, meanwhile, is going to be putting out freshman righty Chase Costello. 0-0 with an ERA of, wait for it, 10.8. 10.80 is the ERA in only 13 innings of work. So maybe this is a good way of getting Chase some confidence, and hopefully the bats can be there, and hopefully the Chase can go the distance and not have to put any wear and tear on the bullpen, because you have the feeling that they're going to need the bullpen when they travel to Fayetteville this weekend.
I mean, you may see that quote from Mineri there. I saw it. They are playing. Mineri has the team well aware, and he is also very knowing that this game has implications on NCAA tournament bids and things.
Yeah, he said, quote, "We got a lot of work to do over these final eight games of the regular season, beginning with a very good La Tech ball club. We're going to get our mindset and put a lot of emphasis on this game because it will have significant NCAA tournament bid implications. We're going to play as hard as we can and hopefully get a victory." The head coach of LSU baseball has made the statement that a midweek game towards the end of the season versus Louisiana Tech has implications on how they're going, what's going to happen to them for their postseason. I didn't anticipate that happening earlier this year. Let's head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on Chad. Chad, how are you this morning, brother?
What's up, man? Hey, look, by the time he needs to look himself and the whole coaching staff in the mirror, this is ridiculous. The team all year has not played with no enthusiasm, no tempo, anything. They look dead. Yes, Les Miles, Joe Paterno, all them guys, Bobby Bowell, all great coaches. Sometimes it's just their time just to go, man. He's even said they should have won more national championships. I think in the last 8 years, they've had the top three recruiting class of the nation. Either somebody's not recruiting right or the evaluation's horrible. I think it's time for him to go, man. I think you need a young, big-time coach. It's a top-two job in America for baseball, hands down. There's no reason why they should be playing like this. I just think they're a mismanaged coach, man, coach team. That's just my opinion, dude. Thank you.
Chad, appreciate the phone call.
Chad, he's not the only one that's thinking it. I'm not saying I'm thinking it, but
Chad's
not
point
alone.
Is not the first time I've heard this.
Me neither. Was it Cody Worsham? Who did I see his story? I believe it was Cody Worsham wrote a story about, is Paul Mineri actually on the hot seat? Like, that's an actual, people are writing about this now.
Chad brings up a couple of valid points. Paul knows this, right? They should have won it a couple of years ago. If Eric Walker doesn't get hurt, they probably win that College World Series. That's not an excuse for Paul Mineri and his staff. But that team that lost to Florida at the College World Series, if they had a healthy Eric Walker, they probably win that College World Series. Okay? But Paul is a very good coach, and he's done very well at LSU. And on top of that, he came in and brought the program back after Smoke Laval, look, people hated Smoke, okay? But Smoke did take LSU to two College World Series. He did win a lot of games. Now, things fell off because he couldn't recruit, and he kind of lost his way. It's tough replacing the legend like Smoke did. He did very good at ULM. He had to replace his mentor, Skip Bertman. Paul has brought them back. They have the great stadium. They've won the one championship. But as it was pointed out over the weekend, that was 10 years ago. And at a place like LSU, where Skip Bertman still cast a huge shadow in what he was able to do with that program, people think I'm kidding about this, Cody. I remember living in the Baton Rouge area as a kid in the late 80s, early 90s. There were moments where the baseball team was bigger than the football team. expectations are winning national championships. This team started the year ranked as the number one team in the country. They're closer to 20 now, and now it looks like they're in danger of not even hosting an NCAA regional. So people like Chad that are calling, expectations at LSU, he brings up Les Miles. That's a pretty good comparison. You have all these recruiting classes and everything like this. It's a valid argument. Is Pulmonary on the hot seat? You know what? We're going to throw it up on the Twitter.
And I want to clarify there. It wasn't Cody Worsham. Seth Dunlop from WWL Radio, he has a story out about it. He's not necessarily saying that Pulmonary is on the hot seat, but he is certainly pointing out all the fans that are in the same ballpark as Chad here claiming that. So I just wanted to clarify. Cody Worsham not writing that. Seth Dunlop just has a piece on the fans that feel Pulmonary should or is on the hot seat.
Season started off as the number one ranked team in the country. And the season's progressed. They've lost to the likes of Northwestern State, McNeese State, Southern, and they've dropped a series to Ole Miss for the first time in Baton Rouge since 1982. Okay? Rotation's a mensch. The arm soreness is another big alarm for me. I know it's prevalent around college baseball right now, but is there something that the way they train their pitchers, they had this arm issue with their staff in the fall, and now it's carried over to the spring? You're LSU. How the hell is your entire pitching staff always hurt? That's a little, like, curious. Like, what? Reminder, LSU Tech tonight. You can listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game. First pitch, 6:30. Pregame will start at 6. The good brother Ben Love will lead you in from 4 to 6 to pregame coverage. We have to take a break here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. Coming up at 7:32, interview with longtime LSUE baseball coach Jeff Willis. Man's in his 17th season at the helm of the Bengals. Finishes national runner-up once, has won the national championship 6 times. They're the defending national champs, and they'll begin their play of defending said title next week. But their regular season is wrapped up, so Coach Willis made some time for us. We'll have that for you here shortly. I want to keep the LSU baseball conversation rolling right along. And I want to hear from you, the listener. There's been a lot of, as a word I love to use, scuttlebutt, about Pulmonary.
A rigmarole.
Is it simply, it's time for a change? Is it just that? I'm not one to jump to a conclusion and do so, but Chad makes up a good point. Top recruiting classes. You have all this talent. Is this season going to be a disappointment if they don't make it to Omaha? You know, because they have, look, they got the 2009 championship under their belt. They should have won a couple years ago. If Eric Walker doesn't get hurt, I assure you, they would have won. They would have beat Florida that year. But they also have had some snafus, right? Stony Brook.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a year where you're like, what? You did what? Say what again? You have that. They lost to Coastal that year.
Yeah, they went on to win the whole thing. And then there was the year in Omaha where they made it to Omaha, and then they lost. There was one year where they were 2-2 in Omaha. This was earlier in Mineri's run. And then there was one year where Trevor Bauer and UCLA ran up against them and lost 2 games to them with a win in between there. So that was a rough go at it for LSU because, yeah, that was the year I believe they beat NC State in between losing to UCLA twice. So it's the point is LSU baseball is going to Omaha and going 1-2 or 0-2. Crazily as it sounds, that's not good enough, which is ridiculous. But
where you're at right now, I guess as a diehard LSU fan, I'm asking you, Cody, to salvage this season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, they could turn this around, take 2 of 3 at Arkansas, and everything right as rain, right? And Paul,
kind of like we saw against, was it Georgia, whoever they did right. that to?
And Paul has done a nice job as the skipper when they get to the SEC tournament, right? They always make a run.
Right.
That said, what do they need to do from your perspective as a diehard LSU fan to salvage the season? Is making it to Omaha, is that good enough?
Whatever. For me, they need to host a regional, win that regional, and then at least win one in a super regional.
Okay. So not Omaha for you.
For this season. Yeah. This specific season, the way it's gone. If they can host the regional and then win that and then compete in that super regional.
We talked about, are you more concerned about the rotation or the bullpen on yesterday's show? That was our Twitter poll question.
81% say starting pitching.
Wow. 81% say starting pitching. We're going to throw up a new question on the Twitter poll. Make sure to go vote. Do you believe Paul Menieri is on the hot seat? Yes or no? Very simple. We'll throw it up on the Twitter account. You can go vote on it on the 103.7 The Game account. When we come back, Jeff Willis, conversation right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He surpassed the 800 win total in his career this season as he helped lead the LSU Eunice Bengals to a 48-6 regular season mark. It's his 17th season at the helm of one of the best programs in the country. He is a 10-time NJCAA Region 23 Coach of the Year, a 6-time NJCAA Coach of the Year. He has led the Bengals to 10 regional championships, 9 district championships, and 9 appearances in the World Series. His teams have won 6 national titles and 1 national runner-up, and he's looking to repeat as national champions starting this week as LSU Eunice gears up for Region 23 tournament later this week. It's our privilege to welcome onto the program the one and only Jeff Willis. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm outstanding. It's a pleasure to be with you guys this morning, and lovely Monday morning, and sun's up right now, and nothing better than, you know, getting to deal with young people and a college baseball skill and trying to get them to become the best versions of themselves. So very, very, very pleased to be with you guys this morning.
Coach, we'll start off with this. Does it ever get old? You've been doing this now. You're in your 17th season. Does it ever get old winning games and going to the region tournament and having a chance to make a run for a national championship?
I don't think it does. But I think it's key to it never gets old watching young people set goals and watching those young people strive to reach those goals and, you know, work their tail off and everything that they're a part of, not just on a field or in a weight room type setting, but in a classroom type setting. And then them trying just to be champions in every walk of their life. And when you're dealing with young people, they can make you get gray hair really, really quick. But on the other side, they keep you young because you get to deal with them every single day and, you know, their struggles and their experiences they have, but also their accomplishments that they get to have. So I don't think there's any walk of life, any walk of life that's just that rewarding to see young people, see them set goals, see them work their tail off to reach those goals, and then them accomplish it and watch them celebrate those goals.
We're speaking with Jeff Willis, longtime head baseball coach there at LSU Eunice. Coach, your team won 48 games this year. That's kind of becoming old hat for you and your program. Tell us a little bit about this team's mentality, this team's mindset, personality, so to speak.
Well, I think
I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, when you have a team that wins the championship the year before, and a lot of times when that team comes back, you have sophomores at a two-year school level or at a four-year school level, you have seniors that would come back. And a lot of times those guys don't understand that they're the guy now. And what I was interested to see this year was, you know, we had a successful year last year. We come back, and those guys a lot of times are looking over their shoulders, looking at, hey, where's so-and-so? Where's so-and-so? Whether it's a leader on the field, whether it's a leader in the clubhouse, and they're waiting for those guys to lead. And what I saw this year is those guys knew that they were those guys now. And they, a lot of times a successful team forgets, you know, all the things that they go through each and every day, the grind they have to go through to reach that goal, reach what they're trying to do. And this team didn't do that. This team from the get-go, you know, set out for a purpose of not winning a championship. They set out a purpose of not winning games, but just trying to play the best brand of baseball that they can play each and every time out. So been a fun group to be around, been a pleasure to be out there with those kids, and just been a lot of, you know, a lot of fun, you know, seeing those guys fight through adversity and then overcome some of those adversities that took place.
Coach Willis, was there a turning point for your team this season? I mean, obviously you guys are the defending national champions, expectations, you got a big bullseye on your back, but was there a turning point in the season where everything kind of clicked together for this year's squad?
Well, no, there was. I think there were several instances. We went on the road kind of in, you know, first quarter of our season and took a road trip where we faced some really, really good pitching, you know, faced everybody's number one in a four-game set. And so we match our one up against someone's number one on the mound. And then our two goes against someone's number one. And then our three goes against somebody's number one. And then our four goes against somebody's number one. And, you know, after that weekend, we went 2-2 on the weekend. And I think our guys realized that nobody was going to really roll over for them and that you were going to get everybody's best shot. And I tell our guys all the time, you mentioned it, the bullseye on your back. You want that. You want people chasing you. You don't want to be chasing individuals. And it's like a train that's on the track. If the train is heading down the track, and that lead train's out there, if that lead train ever slows down, the train behind them is going to catch up with them. And when that train behind them catches up with them, that train's going to run your train right off the tracks, and you derail, and your chances of ever getting back on that track and getting back out front is going to be very, very tough. So our guys, great learning experience for our guys, but also, you know, just us getting to face everybody's best pitcher every single time out, because that bullseye on your back can only make you better. And you want that. If you're a true champion, a true winner, you want everybody's best. You don't want everybody's second best. And so I thought, you know, that was kind of a turning point. And then we have a, you know, another instance in our season where, you know, we had guys that, you know, we had a group that we were winning games, but we weren't playing very hard. And we had some gut checks, and we had some mental conditioning that needed to take place, and where our guys realized that it's not about winning games. It's about playing the best baseball that we're capable of playing. And even though we were winning games, that wasn't good enough. We need to up our standards. We need to up what we expect each and every day. And our guys were able to do that.
Coach, for you, you know, to have the amount of success that you've had, you have to be excellent at two things: recruiting and also developing these players quickly. Because of the level that you're at, you're only going to have these guys a max of, what, 3 years? If one of them has to be redshirted, you may get that extra year of kind of developing them. But you're getting guys primarily from the state of Louisiana, and you've served as a great feeder program for the likes of UL, LSU, you name any program in the state or outside of the state. There's a lot of former LSU UNIS players on those rosters. So how daunting of a challenge is that to be able to have to, you know, hey, I'm only going to have these guys maybe 2 years, max three. I got to recruit the best players that can help us win automatically and guys that I can develop quickly. Like, we can't, it's not a situation where you can wait on a guy to develop 3 years. You got to have impact players right off the bat. How much of a challenge is that?
Well, it's a huge challenge. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think a lot of people, they don't realize that your roster every year, you're going to lose, you know, over half of your roster, and most of the time your sophomores are playing, so you don't, the next year you don't have a lot of experience. You know, even this year, you know, we have one guy on our field that was on the field in the national championship game last year. Two guys on the field that were in that starting lineup last year. And just to have the guys, and I'll tell you what, you got to go to work. You have to go to work from day one And if you sit there and say, hey, we just won a championship and we think it's going to happen again, then you could go from the penthouse to the outhouse very, very, very quickly in junior college sports. And it makes you wake up in the morning. It makes you have a lot of energy in August to say, if we don't get after it from the middle of August and start teaching and start developing the players that we have, and teaching them the mindset that's going to happen to succeed in college baseball, then it's going to be too late. And at this time of the year, you know, we're in the middle of May and getting ready to start the playoffs. The hay's in the barn right now. You know, there's not too much we can do right now. And if we didn't do the things that we need to do in August and September and October, then it's not going to happen for us. And we don't have four-year players or that fifth-year senior that a lot of times those guys can take those younger players underneath their arms. We have guys that are 18, 19, 20 years old that are not that fourth-year senior or fifth-year senior that can do a lot of leading during that time. And so you got to work, or you can go from, like I said, from that penthouse to the outhouse very, very quickly.
We're speaking with Coach Jeff Willis, longtime head coach of the LSU Eunice baseball team. Coach, when are you going to find out what your schedule is like for the NJCAA Region 23 tournament that's going to start later this week?
Well, the final teams will be determined on this Thursday and Friday over in the state of Mississippi. They have some three-game series that teams have to make their way through. We know right now there's two teams that are in that tournament, Itawamba Community College, where that's where the tournament will be located. And we know we will play at noon on Wednesday, May 15th, against an opponent to be determined right now.
So what do you do now as the head coach? Well, you got this time, you've been grinding it out, you know, more than 50 games all season, and now all of a sudden you have this lull for your team, which is going to be about a week and a half, a little shade under a week and a half. What are you doing with your ball club right now to keep them fresh, to keep them focused, to keep them sharp, Coach?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's always a concern. You hit the nail on the head. You know, they're always a concern when you have a lull right there, when you're not playing in a competitive environment. You know, last night on our road trip back, and then in the locker room, we set teams aside, put two teams together, and we'll have some very, very competitive inter-squads on Thursday and Friday. And we'll put a lot on the line with some conditioning and some mental things just to kind of try to up the game just a little bit so those guys feel like they're in a competitive environment. And then letting our players understand that some teams that you're going to be playing against, you know, in about, you know, a week and a half, 10 days, May 15th, they were playing on this Thursday and Friday with their backs against the wall. Either they win or they go home. And so our guys have to understand that those teams are playing in competitive environments, and there's nothing we can do about it. Everybody's playing in conference tournaments. We've qualified for the event. There's nobody we can go schedule at this point in time, and we've got to just do the best we can as coaches to create, you know, the most competitive environment and put as much on the line as we possibly can. And when you put mental conditioning or you put some things on the line for those kids, a lot of times they're going to get after it and being able to understand what it's going to take, you know, the next week.
Coach, we'll wrap it up with this. We're talking to LSUE head baseball coach Jeff Willis. Coach, you've been doing this quite a long time, brother. I know you're dedicated. You love LSUE. You got a degree from there. You've been coaching there as an assistant and then a longtime head coach. How many more years you got left in you, brother?
I'm not that old, so I guess LSUE hired me when I was 24 years old, and so, you know, 17 years into that, and I was an assistant coach at a four-year school for a couple of years before that, and when they hired me, you know, my two children were born in Women's and Children's Hospital in Lafayette, and my family and I have been here for now 17 years, and we love Acadiana, we love South Louisiana, we love the culture, the traditions, everything that makes this place great. We enjoy it. 17 years, I'm 42 years old, so I'm not that old right now, and I've got a lot of coaching left in me.
Well, Coach, congratulations on the terrific season. You and your team deserve the rest, and best of luck to you when the Region 23 tournament kicks off next week, and thank you so much for taking time out.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
That's LSUE head baseball coach Jeff Willis. His Bengals are 48-6 on the season, and they're gearing up for the Region 23 tournament. They also are the defending national champions. We have to hit a break here for more RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Coming up next.
2-2. And Torino shoots it to right. Soler is going back, looking up. See you later! A go-ahead opposite field. Two-run home run for Torinos. And the Astros go back on top, 5-4.
Big moment for Robinson Torinos going the other way, putting the Astros back on top with a big bomb to right field.
Hey, Ray.
Hey, Cody.
Remember that time? What was it? I forget exactly what the highlight was, but you asked for a highlight of something. And when I played it, it was from like, it was an NBA highlight, and it was from a completely different game.
Yes.
Right. I forget. You wanted a Rockets highlight, right? And I gave you like a Wizards highlight or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I told you it was labeled incorrectly. And that's the first time in like 4 years that I've had that happen to me. Would you think it would happen more often? I didn't listen or watch the Astros game last night, admittedly. I was expecting to hear, according to the label, a Josh Reddick two-run home run. Apparently, it was not Josh Reddick that hit it, but Robinson Chirinos.
Hey, man, it's still a highlight, brother.
Oh, I mean, it works. It's still a two-run bomb. Go-ahead bomb there, but I thought it was going to be from Josh Reddick. Twas not.
Twas not. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, where we give you highlights. Sometimes they're mislabeled.
Twice now.
Here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Network 24-Hour Sports. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you'd like, 337-706-0111. Reminder, make sure to go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Vote on our latest poll. Do you believe Paul Maneri should be on the hot seat is the question. Already getting some traction there. We'll update you before the end of today's show. Astros, though, they took both games in Monterey over the weekend in Mexico versus the California, Los Angeles of Anaheim, San Diego Credit Union.
Disneyland,
Arizona Angels.
Arizona.
And they took both of those games to build up some momentum. Look, this is a team that's trying to get things back on track. They had split the series with the Cleveland Indians at home at Minute Maid. That was a four-game set. They went 2-for-2. And then they lost 3-of-4 at Minnesota at Target Field last week. They got back on track with the back-to-back wins over the Angels over the weekend in Mexico. And last night, they're trying to get things going in the right direction as well by winning 6-to-4 over the Kansas City Royals. All around, terrific performance for the Stros. So you had Jacob Junis hit himself a leadoff home run, the 27th of his career. This is 11th this year, which is at press time last night, a tie for first place in the AL for most home runs. George Springer did his thing as well. His home run only went 436 feet. That's it. 436 feet.
That's not a Springer dinger. I'm going to have to come up with a new name for that one.
Carrera hit one as well that went 424. He also extended his hit streak to 16 games. So you get Russ Springer production. You get Carlos Carrera production. Josh Reddick did his thing. Pitching-wise, Garrett Cole looked good. Now, he looked good for the majority of.
So I hate to do this to you. I feel like Clint right now.
What?
You called George Russ, and that's really funny to me.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, because it's Russ Springer. It's a different guy.
Same sport.
I'm sorry. If you would have called him a name that didn't already own, like, belong to another baseball player, I would have let it go. But
that's okay. I appreciate you keeping me honest because I'm humble enough to deal with that. I also am making a note here. Guess who's going to have himself a Saturday show now? I'll make you be the opening act for World Famous CD.
Sundays at 1 a.m.
Tune in live for Cody Shoots Sunday at 1 a.m. Yeah, and I actually know Russ Springer a little bit because he's from Alexandria.
Well, you said it in a way that, like, it was, that's what caught my ear because I was like, he just rolled through that like he knows this guy. I was like, what is, so that makes sense. There you go.
Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, by the way, Russ Springer.
Well, today I learned.
Yes, today you learned. The 1 a.m. show. That's a good idea, actually.
No, it's terrible.
Garrett Cole, he pitched fairly well early on, but then in the fourth inning, he started to unravel a little bit. Hunter Dozier hit one of Cole's fastballs into the seats, and that brought the Royals within one run. Billy Hamilton of the Royals then led off with a single in the fifth, but found a spot in right field. So Cole pitched well, early on, but then things kind of got away from him a little bit. But despite that, despite Garrett Cole not having his best stuff, the Houston Astros still found a way to win the game. And that's what good teams do. Even when one of your aces, and because Garrett Cole is the number two pitcher on this staff, he's the second best pitcher they have, behind, of course, Justin Verlander, a.k.a. Mr. Kate Upton. Cody, any chance I get to bring up Kate Upton on the show, I feel is a service that is needed for the listeners.
Where'd this the magazine's gone. It was here, I promise.
But even with the two-run lead, the Astros' defense, Cole did not have his best stuff, but then the defense stepped up for the Houston Astros to get them the win there in the eighth and ninth innings. Will Harris, you know him, Cody.
Yes, LSU.
A ball bounced off his glove. He pounced on it and then threw out a speedy Kansas City Royals runner by just a hair. They got out of it. Altuve stepped up big. So, look, it wasn't the Astros' cleanest game. Garrett Cole didn't have his best stuff. They were able to hit home runs, but they needed some defensive stops in the later innings to hold off the Royals. But still, a win is a win. Now it's three in a row for the Houston Astros. You can listen to them live tonight on our sister station, KVOL, the Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette, also 104.1 in Lake Chuck. When we come back, it'll be time for the third and final hour right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU's for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost thing, you know, when you look up in the stadium and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of today's edition of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium 24-Hour Sports Network. It's time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He is the Assistant Director of Athletic Communications for Louisiana Tech. He's going to help us break down tonight's baseball game between the Bulldogs and the Tigers, as well as give us an update about the recovery efforts there in Ruston and on the campus of Louisiana Tech after the tornado that occurred less than 2 weeks ago. It's our privilege to welcome onto the program Brock McKee. Brock, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Raymond. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you making some time for us. Brock, let's start what's going on the diamond with the Bulldogs, kind of get a perspective from you about that, and then we'll dive into everything that's been going on there around Ruston and the recovery efforts and how people can help out. So this Tech ball club is pretty good. I know Paul Maneri said yesterday, the LSU head coach, about how key this game is and that he's trying to get his team focused to go out there tonight and get the W, and that this is a team that deserves to be respected. Give us a little insight about this year's Louisiana Tech baseball team and what makes them so good.
Yeah, well, this was a team that 2 weeks ago was ranked 18th in the nation, riding the longest winning streak in the nation at 10 games, and had just knocked off FAU on the road, and that's the conference leader right now. So, you know, it's a team that's definitely capable of those things. As you've seen recently, you know, with a lot of the tragedy that struck, and the team's play has kind of reflected that, and, you know, they've kind of been trending down. But, like, again, this is a dangerous team. They're full of veteran hitters. Seven of our nine position players are upperclassmen, so you're going to see a very balanced offensive approach, and you know, that's what Lane Burrows preaches. He preaches, you know, never take at bats for granted. So you're going to see a lot of that tonight, a lot of patient at bats, and that's what these hitters do. They just wear pitchers down. So it'll be good to see these guys get back in action tonight against a tough opponent. I mean, it's always fun to go to the box. We love it, and you know, we're just excited for it tonight.
You know, Brock, talk a little bit about how they've been able to kind of focus, unable to play at home for the remainder of the season and also next year, right? Or is that still up in the air for next season?
I think that's still up in the air, but I think it's probably not going to happen. I think they want to take their time on this. I think they want to rebuild something that's going to be worth it. I don't think they want to rush and do anything. So I think realistically you're looking at next year not playing at home. And that's tough. You know, that's a strain on recruiting. You know, that can be a strain on guys who are going in their senior year next year. No, they're not going to be able to play at home. So, you know, it's definitely a lot for these guys to think about. It's tough because it happened right in the middle of the year, right before senior weekend. You know, our senior weekend's next weekend, and we're going to be doing it at ULM. So it'll be tough for those guys, but, you know, they're looking forward to it. And, you know, I think they've had some time to heal and kind of put some things behind them. So I think they're ready to move on from it.
Brock, with the situation being what it is at the field, I noticed, you know, looking at the schedule, did you guys just simply make all the games road games? And I know you got you're using ULM's facilities, Warhawk Field, for senior weekend against Western Kentucky. That was an agreement that you guys were able to make with them. But all the other games, was that how the schedule lined up, where you're going to be on the road so much here at the end of April and the beginning of May, or was that a switch due to what happened?
No, that's actually how it lined up. It was, okay. It was kind of strange. We were in line for nine in a row. This is our last of nine in a row, and then we were scheduled to come home for three and then head back out on the road. So, you know, it kind of lined up well that we didn't have to move a whole lot of things around, but it's definitely a road-heavy stretch. You know, these guys have been out on it for a while now, and it can be taxing, but, you know, they're right in the thick of things for the conference tournament, and so, you know, I think there's a lot to play for this team right now.
We're on the ARCO Equipment Hotline with Brock McKee. He's the Assistant Director of Athletic Communications for Louisiana Tech. Brock, tell me a little bit about the young man who's going to be taking the bump tonight for the Bulldogs there inside Alex Box Stadium. Give us a little bit of insight on the starting pitching.
Yeah, it's going to be left-hander Logan Robbins. He's been Tech's Saturday starter ever since he got here. He came here last year and actually began his career 7-0 with the Bulldogs, 25-0 dating back to his JUCO days. So he was actually hadn't lost in his first 25 starts, collegiate starts. But this year he got he's moved out of the rotation, the weekend rotation, and moved into more of a midweek role. Last week was his first midweek start against Northwestern, and probably his best start of the year. He went six innings, gave one unearned run. So, you know, you're going to see a guy who's tough and competitive. He's going to battle. You know, his issue is walks. He'll walk a guy every now and then, but last week he didn't walk anybody. So you know, you'll see a competitive guy out there on the bump for the Bulldogs tonight.
Brock, tell me a little bit about the bats. I know during this long road trip, the scoring runs has come few and far between. A lot of one run, two run games there during this stretch. That's kind of led to the losing streak, so to speak, or the losing the games on the road trip. Is that simply just a lull, or is this, you know, or is this thing more of a trend going on with this team that may be something to be concerned about?
You know, I think right now it's still in the lull phase. I think you still have some bright spots in the lineup, but you're just not seeing timely hitting right now from this team and from the top of the lineup. And that's what you need. And that's what makes this team so dangerous. You and Taylor Young and Hunter Wells lean things off. If they're not getting on base, then your offense isn't going to run. So, you know, they've been trending upwards lately, and it's just been tough to get those two out hits lately, but you know, I'm expecting a shift over from that. You know, the team spirits have been great. There's nothing, you know, down. I mean, they've put together competitive bats. It's just not falling away right now, but they fully expect things to turn around.
And can you tell us a little bit about the job that your head coach has done? I mean, this is a situation that's difficult. Look, it's a challenge. It's a daunting challenge to deal with coaching a college baseball team to begin with, right? I mean, the grind of the season, the amount of games, all the travel involved, and expectations that come along with being the head coach there of the Bulldogs. But can you kind of speak a little bit about the added responsibility and how he's kind of rose to that occasion with everything that's going on up there in Ruston?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great to see. What people don't realize is that when our baseball stadium was basically essentially destroyed, that moved all the coaches' offices out too. So the coaches are all without offices. The players are without a locker room. So there's nowhere for them to go. And, I mean, when we came back, we had a midweek on Tuesday. So, you know, we had to bounce back real quick. And, you know, they've slid over into Ruston High. Thank goodness they've been really generous to us and letting them use their facilities. But you know, I have not seen a shift of demeanor or anything from this coaching staff, and I think that's what's kept these guys up and ready to play, because you know, these coaches could very easily pack it in and say, well, we don't have anything, we're done, and you know, but that's not Coach Burrow's personality. His personality is to go out there and fight, and you know, that's what he's showing these guys day in and day out. And I do think these close ball games will eventually flip and start to go our way a little bit here.
We're on the ARCO Equipment Hotline with Brock McKee, assistant AD of communication at Louisiana Tech. Brock, I want to switch over from baseball a little bit, because they're not the only team that has been affected. The softball team facility was heavily damaged as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It was essentially totally destroyed. And they just went out and won the conference tournament. So, you know, they've definitely put that behind them and moved forward. But yeah, softball was destroyed. Our tennis complex was destroyed, and our soccer facility was destroyed. So four of the sports facilities were all gone.
Brock, tell us a little bit about this softball team. I know fans around here know them a little bit because of playing UL down here. Obviously, playing up there in Ruston as well this year, playing a game. Little bit of familiarity. This softball team is very good, gearing up for the Conference USA Championships later this week over in Birmingham, the conference tournament. What are the expectations around with the softball team right now?
Yeah, well, they came into the year predicted to win the league, and they did just that. So I think they're trending right along to where they're supposed to be. They left today for Birmingham, and so they'll play on Thursday. But this is a team that's, you know, 40-win team, and their RPI is right there at 50. So, you know, you could definitely see them possibly an at-large team if they make a deep run in this conference tournament. So they're definitely dangerous, you know, just like the team 2 years ago that made a regional. So I think they're definitely a team to look for.
Brock, let's get back to, you kind of hinted at it a little bit, how everyone's been displaced. The baseball and the softball facilities have been destroyed. It's been forcing everyone to play elsewhere, practice elsewhere, and it's put a great strain on everything. Where do we stand now in kind of the recovery efforts there on campus with regarding the athletic teams as well as just the campus itself?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't extend our thanks to everybody who's reached out and helped. I mean, the support and the outreach has been truly incredible, just not only from the Tech community, from the Tech student base, but just across the nation. I mean, the tweets and calls we received from people all across, it's been truly incredible. And, you know, every time you drive by, you see kids out there picking up, you know, logs and trees, and just, they don't have to, but they're just doing it because. And so it's really incredible. And, you know, we're really fortunate that it was just athletic facilities that were destroyed. I mean, there's dorms in our left field that are 100 feet away from where that tornado struck. And, you know, it could have been a lot worse. And so we're thankful and grateful that it was just buildings for the most part. And, you know, there were two lives lost in Ruston, but, like I said, it could have been a lot worse. And as far as the recovery's going, you know, you'll still see damage along camp. I mean, it still looks pretty bad, but, they're still assessing a lot of that. I think they're trying to figure out what they can salvage and what they can't. But you know, we're just grateful to everybody who's reached out and helped us along this time.
Brock, to further that, how can people help that are listening right now help out the university? What are some ways that people can maybe make a donation or donate some time? What can they do?
Yeah, there's a link on LaTechSports.com. There's a disaster relief link that people can go to. It's really easy to find. It'll pop up right when you go to our website. And so people can make donations there. Or through the American Red Cross, they're also accepting donations too. And, you know, it's been incredible to see other teams, you know, take donations for us. The other night at Northwestern State, they raised over $2,200 just that night for us. And, you know, it's just really incredible to see other teams taking up and, stepping up and taking up this mantle. So, we're just extremely grateful and for all the support.
Brock, appreciate you coming on. Best of luck to you guys out there in the recovery efforts, and we'll be keeping everyone up there in Ruston in our thoughts and prayers, and do what we can down here in South Louisiana to help you guys out. So thank you so much for making time for us.
Hey, thanks, Raymond. Appreciate you having me on.
That was Brock McKee. He's the Assistant Director of Athletic Communications for Louisiana Tech, giving us a little bit of a preview for tonight's baseball game between Tech and LSU, but more importantly, telling us about the efforts of everyone up there in North Louisiana, helping not only the town of Ruston, but also the university after the deadly tornado hit there and destroyed multiple facilities there on campus. So if you can help out, please do what Brock says. Go online, do what you can do. Be greatly appreciated. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, more sports talk right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. I mean, we could have just had the rest of this segment of the show, Cody, just with that music. That would have been okay. By the way, just take a mental note.
Is it Casbah? Cash Bar? Cash Bar? I don't know.
My man went with Cash Bar. I like that.
Rock the Cash Bar. Rock the Cash. No, it's not. Not the lyric. I mean, if I the label here, I don't know if I trust the label.
Someone needs some pop-up video.
It's Casbah.
That's correct.
I've looked it up before. I forget. It's like a bodega or something, isn't it? It's like a countertop or something.
My man with Cash Bar. I love it.
Millenniums, as my father-in-law calls me.
He calls you a millennium?
Not a millennial, but a millennium.
Oh, welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW, Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. It was a good weekend for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns baseball team. We led off today's show talking exactly about that, with them taking 2-3 at Coastal Carolina, and they have put themselves in a position to now make a run to get to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Conway, South Carolina. Well, one of the Raging Cajun stars was honored for his performance in that series against the Chanticleers. Todd Lott. He was named yesterday the LSWA Hitter of the Week. The Jacksonville, Florida native led the team with 9 hits over the 3-game series with 7 RBIs and a slugging percentage, wait for it, of .824. .824 slugging percentage. His best game over the weekend was on Saturday when the Raging Cajun senior racked up a career-high 4 RBIs to help the Cajuns take the series against the Chanticleers. After the weekend, Todd Lott now leads the team with a .344 average, 37 RBIs, and ranks second on the team with 56 total hits. So, tremendous honor for Todd Lott. Congratulations to him. He has been on a tear. And this is a guy that debated transferring out not that long ago, stuck with the Raging Cajuns, and now he's been a big reason why they even have a chance of making a run to the Sun Belt Conference tournament this season. So, Cody, today's Tuesday.
Tomorrow's Wednesday.
That's right. But today is Tuesday, which means it is the morning after Monday Night Raw, which means...
Oh, yay! This is what we're going to do. Yay! This,
my favorite new thing about wrestling occurred last
night. We're really glad that you're our friend. This is a friendship that'll never, ever end. Yeah. We're talking Firefly Funhouse.
I am totally on board for this new development with the WWE, with Bray Wyatt.
It may just be this one part of WWE we're excited about, but we're excited about it.
Where he has decided to come back as a different version of himself, as the only best way that I can describe it is as a demented children's show host.
Yeah.
With puppets that will literally look into your soul and claim it for their own.
That's right. It's like if Beelzebub took over Mr. Rogers and Steve from Blue's Clues mashed together.
But even exactly. Scarier than that, what that sounds.
So, but we've introduced characters like Abby the Witch, Mercy the Buzzard, Ramblin' Rabbit. These have all made appearances at the Firefly Funhouse. And
last night was the third week.
It was. This was the third episode.
Now, mind you, Wyatt has yet to wrestle.
No. We haven't even seen him live yet.
These are just
vignettes.
Vignettes that are being played during Monday Night Raw.
They're about 3 minutes long.
And introducing the new character because he had went away, got injured, correct?
Right.
He's came back, has not been seen.
He's trimmed down a little bit, too.
The whole thing was he was a cult leader from the swamps of Louisiana.
Yeah, he was a Charles Manson type. It what it is. Yes. His gimmick was very, very similar to a Charles Manson type. Follow me, I'll lead you the way, I am the correct. One and only type thing. Yes.
So this interests me as a old school, and I'll say this, as an old school wrestling fan, one of the things that made me stop watching wrestling was the lack of characters. And I know the WWE went through this whole era where they actually had guys that could wrestle, which was a big thing, because I grew up in an era where guys didn't necessarily have to wrestle. They could be built like me and just have a gimmick. But characters are missing. And as a guy that has not watched wrestling on a regular occurrence for more than a decade, I'm intrigued by this. I like this. They're taking their time to do this storytelling and develop this new character, and it's creepy as hell, man. Last night's episode, the kids alone at the end.
Yes, there were actual children in the Firefly Funhouse this time around.
Little demented looking zombie children.
Yes, very, very scary. They were all sitting on the floor staring at something.
I don't know what they were staring at, but I'm intrigued. This makes me want to start watch wrestling, which, you know, my wife is a little excited about, but then she's like, we don't have time.
There's a lot to talk about from wrestling this week. There's a new wild card rule now in effect. There's a lot. Check out the podcast.
That's right. See, you stole my thunder. I was going to let the folks know to check out the 20 by 20 podcast.
We don't even need to plug it that hard. If you're watching wrestling right now.
Hosted by Cody Schuetz.
You want to hear about it.
Guest appearance by the world famous CD.
Nah, he's there. He's there.
He's there. When we come back after this break, we're going to talk Saints rookie minicamp with Andrew Judge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. It's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our third and final guest of today's show. He's the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's our good friend, always gives us great insight into the Hoodats. It's the one and only Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you this morning?
Doing great, Raymond. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you making time for us as always, man. Let's talk a little bit about Saints rookie minicamp is this week. Talk to me about any guys that you're wanting to kind of keep an eye on during the little abbreviated minicamp session for the rookies this week. Is there anyone that you're really looking, that you're really excited to see in person, watch the film, see how they work out in the gold and black?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think there's the two first picks that the Saints made, not first-round picks, but just the first two picks that they made, Eric McCoy and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I mean, those two guys, to me, stand out as the most intrigued, because those are really the two players that I think the Saints acquired that jump out at me as guys that can contribute in year one and actually make the team, potentially start, and certainly have a role where they're playing on Sunday. So that's the most intriguing to me. You know, this time of year, rookie mini camps are interesting because you've got a great mix of players. You've got your undrafted rookies. You got your rookie class, of course, but then you've also got your undrafted class. And then you've got all these rookie camp invites. And a lot of times it's a mix of other undrafted rookies that are not signed currently, and they have a chance to impress enough in rookie camp, they land a contract and get on the 90-man roster. And then there's also some veterans that come to rookie camp. And every year it seems like there's a guy, Larivius is a perfect example of a guy who shows up to a rookie camp for the Saints, shows enough that they sign him, and eventually he becomes part of the team for 2 years. So, and this will be year number three for him. So there is still an opportunity, I think, for players to come and impress. And most of the time it ends up being guys that you really don't expect. So that'll be interesting to me, but I still feel very unresolved about who the third running back is on this team. And right now, obviously, you've got Latavius Murray, who was signed in the offseason, and Alvin Kamara is unquestionably your starter now that Mark Ingram's gone. But who is the number three running back behind him? And you've got the undrafted rookie out of Nebraska, who's interesting. You know, you've got a couple of additions outside of the draft that are going to come in and compete. Washington is kind of the incumbent number three. But I feel very unresolved about running back. And when you look over the years at the opportunities that were afforded to Chris Ivory and Traverse Cadet and Kyrie Robinson and Pierre Thomas, how many no names have we seen come through this organization, make the team, and then contribute on Sundays? I just think the way it's set up right now, it's wide open for some running back to come in and impress and make this team. They may not play a lot at first, but they're a third running back to be had on this roster. So if I'm just looking at a position, I don't know that there's one player that I'm necessarily looking at closely, but I want to see who emerges out of this camp as kind of the lead dog, because I think there's an interesting possibility to earn not only a roster spot, but potentially some snaps and be able to contribute.
We're talking to Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Andrew, I want to touch on Cole Tracy, All-American there at LSU, kicker. Look, the Saints have their guy, Will Lutz. They gave him the extension in the offseason. What do you make of Cole Tracy getting a workout with the New Orleans Saints days after he worked out for the Green Bay Packers? And do you feel that there's any possible way that they sign him? Maybe he runs kicking duties for the scout team or something like that. What do you think about Cole Tracy coming in for a workout, and do you think he can stick?
You know, I'll be honest. I never really felt like Cole Tracy, and I'm an LSU fan, so I've watched him kick, and a big fan of his in terms of him being a college kicker. But I don't know how confident I am in being an NFL kicker. And first of all, I think when it comes to the trajectory of his kicks, I think a lot of times he hit at LSU a lot of line drives, a lot of lower kicks. And, you know, in the NFL, they really like that high arcing, booming kick. That's what Will Lutz has. And so even though Will Lutz was less accurate in college, and even though he came from a small school, I think he impressed teams in workouts, and the Ravens really liked him, and then he ends up getting a job with the Saints because of the shape of his kick. And I feel like the trajectory of Paul Tracy's kick was maybe a little more inconsistent at LSU. Now, he was really accurate, and he made a lot of his kicks, which made him a very successful college kicker. But I don't know that he has the big-time leg to make those 57, 58-yard field goals, you know. And the way he kicks, I think, trajectory is a block kick. So he's going to have a lot of work to do, I think, to make it in the NFL. Now, I love that the Saints are inviting him to camp, even though they have Will Lutz, because you never know what happens. The trouble with having a kicker is it's always one roster spot, and you don't really have a backup. And so it's one of those things where if something were to happen to Will Lutz and he lands on injured reserve, they just want to keep tabs on other guys that are out there and available so that they can sign someone if they need to in a moment's notice to replace in case of an injury. So you want to keep tabs. You want to see how Cole Tracy's doing. And so I think that would be an exciting prospect to have in the building if something were to happen to Will Lutz. And so, but I think ultimately, as you look at the 90-man roster, I don't really see him coming in and making this team, because I just think the Saints will want that on that 90-man roster. Over the years, what you've seen is they don't even bring competition for Thomas Morstead or Will Lutz anymore, because they know those are their guys, and they don't really need competition at those positions, because unless an injury happens, nothing's going to change there. So I think this is just an opportunity for Cole Tracy to maybe get around some NFL players, get around some NFL coaching, maybe learn a thing or two from Will Lutz. And I think that will benefit him as he tries to make a team, and it will benefit his career. So obviously I'm rooting for the guy, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he does. But ultimately, I don't really see a path to where he would even make the 90-man roster and get a chance to kick for the Saints in preseason games.
We're speaking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on RP3 and Company. Andrew, what about Ed Paris? He's the other LSU Tiger that got an invite to minicamp. He went undrafted, the safety, sometimes linebacker there at LSU. Do you think Ed Paris has an opportunity to possibly make that 90-man roster?
Well, he's a guy that, in my opinion, grossly underachieved at LSU. You look at how highly he was rated coming into college. He was a very exciting signing of high school and a very productive high school player that was supposed to have a better career at LSU than he did. And so in some ways, I think he's disappointing, but I still think the talent level is there and the potential is there. So look, these rookie mini camps are quick, and you've got a very small window to impress. And, you know, I think it's great to be able to go to a combine if you can and impress a team in shorts with your speed and your bench reps and your cone drills and your vertical leap and all that stuff. But ultimately, football is played with pads on. And, you know, you can look great in shorts, but then how do you look on the field? And so that's a big question for me, and it's a short window for him to impress. But, you know, I think that's your invites, that's where you want to take your gamble. It's guys that maybe have not impressed with their production, but they have the physical makeup to potentially make it. And so I think this is a profile of a player when you look at Paris. I mean, I look at a guy who probably doesn't make the 90-man roster because for whatever reason he has not been able to produce in college. But I think it's a guy who comes very highly recruited, a guy that has an enormous amount of potential. And so when you look at NFL teams, it's like, hey, if the light comes on for some of these guys, then they have the potential to become really good players. And so I think you would prefer that to guys that maybe were highly productive in college, but you just know they don't have the body, they don't have the speed, they're never going to make it in the NFL. I would much rather a guy with potential that maybe you see kind of turn a corner and start to produce. So that's the profile player you want, and you know, I think he's a long shot, but hey, listen, somebody's got to make this team. And you know, when you talk about the position, we just talked about running back, but safety to me is another position where, you know, obviously the Saints drafted two guys in that position group for a reason. They didn't feel like there was a lot of depth there. So there is a path to the roster at that position as a backup. Ultimately, if he's going to make this team or have any impact whatsoever, when you're a backup secondary guy, you have to make an impact on special teams. So if he is going to turn some heads or have any chance at a 90-man roster, to me, producing as a gunner on special teams is the most obvious path.
Andrew, any of the guys, the nearly dozen guys that got the invites to minicamp, obviously these are guys that are undrafted free agents that weren't even signed, and these guys are not under contract. This is a simple invite. And all the teams do this to have enough bodies to go through rookie minicamp so they can actually see the guys that they drafted or signed, how they can perform. They're essentially bodies out there, and some will try to stick, right? Any of those guys that got invited piques your interest, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So they have a guy that's 6'9" out of BYU, a defensive end, and you know, his height alone interests me. You know, I think anytime you've got a player like that with long arms, too, and a wingspan where you know, he gets his paws up and he can bat a ball down pretty easily. So, you know, defensive end, again, until they sign Ziggy Ansah, right now the third defensive end on this team is Trey Hendrickson. And so I don't feel great about that position. Hendrickson is still a prospect that I believe in that could potentially be a good role player for the Saints. But they are pretty thin at defensive end, and so you know, Granderson out of Wyoming is another guy who I look at him, and he's a guy where he has a checkered past, and he has a legal issue coming up that's pretty serious. So we'll wait to see how that all plays out. But I mean, he's a guy that should have been drafted, and you know, he would have been drafted had it not been for the off the field stuff. So if he can get that behind him, then all of a sudden he becomes a really interesting prospect to me. So again,
Andrew, and you're talking about the kid from BYU. You're talking about Corbin Kawafusi, right? The guy that also played basketball for 2 years at BYU.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you know, position change could be something to watch for him too. But certainly, as a pass rusher, at least for now, when you just look at size, you just never see guys playing that position at that height. So that's an interesting one for me.
Yeah, and he intrigues me as well, both of those guys. But the kid out of BYU, look, he's so big. And a lot of times when a guy is that tall, they're not very effective because a lot of times they don't know how to dominate in that body, right? And they don't know how to maneuver, and they don't know how to really do things. But he was effective as a defensive end for the Cougars. You know, he had nearly 200 tackles in his career, 20 tackles for a loss, 17 sacks. But the thing that I like about him is he had many blocked and altered field goals. So he plays the special teams because of his height. He can get that big paw up. And a guy like that, that is that big and physical, you could use him just specifically for special teams, right? You can have him just on the field goal blocking team, and he can make a difference there. You hope you get some production as a backup on the defensive line. But just his ability to be able to alter special teams is going to give him a great opportunity to make this roster.
Well, he's got a teammate from BYU that has produced pretty well on special teams as well. So Taysom Hill played college ball with him. And so, you know, I think I know Hill was very excited to see him join the Saints and be in the building. So, you know, obviously he's going to get some pointers and tips from Hill on how to produce on special teams. And yeah, like you said, it's an intriguing prospect, but any of these guys we're talking about, they're not going to be starters or play day one. And so the path to the roster for guys like this, again, it's special teams. And so when you talk about the ability to block field goals, if you can bring yourself to the table with some role. Maybe over time you can develop into a positional player, but the path to the roster for these guys, again, has got to be through special teams because they will not be day one starters. So if they can create value for themselves and still be contributors in that phase of the game, that allows the Saints to keep them on the team and develop them at different positions. So absolutely, I think right now when you look at these guys, can they be exciting prospects day one on special teams? That's their best chance to make the team.
Andrew, appreciate you taking some time for us, breaking down a little Saints rookie mini camp this week. I hope you enjoy it, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Andrew Juge, Saints Happy Hour podcast. Breaking down Saints rookie minicamp. There is some interesting prospects. The kid out of BYU, that's intriguing. Not only because of his size, and if you can develop him, he's a little bit older because he went to BYU. Obviously, they have the mission responsibilities there. He was an effective pass rusher for BYU. Maybe you can develop him on the defensive line, but he could make an impact there. I mean, Cody, 6'9". 6'9".
Nice.
And a huge wingspan. The only thing he has to do is just put up his arms on a field goal attempt.
Be a very nice player.
Could be. So I'm intrigued by that. So Saints rookie minicamp will be later this week over the weekend. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll put a bow on it. Wrap up this edition on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, where we're more human than human, right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing.
Is that the album, or is that just another song?
That's the song that you're playing right now.
Well, no, the song I'm playing now is Dracula.
That's right, yeah.
But is it the album, or is that just a song title?
That's a song.
It's just a song.
It's just a song.
I didn't know if that was the title. Rob Zombie is what we're talking, ladies and gentlemen.
Or White Zombie. I mean. It all depends. It's all the same.
You know the guy in Rascal Flatts, his name's not Rascal Flatts. Did you know that?
I'm assuming Rascal Flatts is a country act.
Yes.
I just took a shot in the dark.
I grew up thinking his name was Rascal Flatts. No, it's a bad name. They pulled a Lynyrd Skynyrd on me, except I didn't know about it. It's real. Oh, come on. I can't be the only person out there who thought Rascal Flatts was his name.
I have no idea. I can't even name you a Rascal Flatts song, so I can't help you.
Oh, they did
here.
The remake of Life is a Highway. But the remake.
Anger.
They've got plenty of number one hits. They were a good, like...
I'm sure they do.
Like late 90s, early 2000s country band, and they're still around.
I'm sure.
Their lead singer looks a lot like Uncle Cracker. I wish I was making this up. I really wish I was making this up.
Is it Uncle Cracker like Kid Rock's former DJ, right?
Yes, exactly. Follow me and everything.
Yeah, he came to Alexandria once when I lived there. He played at Bringhurst Field for like 45 minutes. He was 5 hours late. True story.
I went to Voodoo Fest. I went to Voodoo Fest in 2008. Lil Wayne was scheduled to play that day at 4:20 p.m. The concert started at like 6, and they cut him off early, and he got real mad. And he was like, this is New Orleans. This is my city. I can do what I want. But like R.E.M. was chilling in the back like, nah, we need to play now. That's literally how it R.E.M. followed Lil Wayne.
Michael Stipe with his passive aggressiveness said no.
Or was it STP? It might have been Stone Temple Pilots. They both played that weekend.
Nice.
Either one of them followed Lil Wayne, though. Really funny.
There we go.
I think the moral of the story here is that Uncle Cracker looks like Rascal Flatts. A little bit.
And Rascal Flatts is the name of a band and not a person.
The name of the band, not the guy.
That's that next level stuff Cody Schuetz is bringing to the table, ladies and gentlemen.
What you get every day. Every day.
Programming reminder.
His name is Jay DeMarcus.
We are a week away, ladies and gentlemen, from debuting our new golf show, Chip Shots with Rob Spires. That's going to debut next Tuesday, the week of the PGA Championship. It's going to run from 9 to 10 live right here on 103.7 The Game. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. So make sure to mark your calendars, tune in for that. The debut will be a week from today. Later today, though, Jordy Holberg Show with Uncle Jordy from 2 to 4. The Good Brother Bumper, the Bumper Sports hosted by Ben Love, is going to take you in to LSU pregame. Ben will be on from 4 to 6. LSU pregame versus La Tech at Alex Box Stadium. Starts at 6, first pitch 6:30. Astros versus Royals, they'll be on our sister station, KVOL, the Rewind.